You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Wednesday, October 13th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get this mother clucker once it goes live. We will talk to Alex Smith, great hockey handicapper and the host of the Ice Guys. Are you ready for some puck? Alex has a team to buy, a team to sell. He's got some win total bets, and we'll get into his favorite angles for the NHL season. Can't believe it's already here. You know, next week, there's a chance in New England, if the Red Sox and Astros go the distance, there's a chance the Red Sox, the Patriots, the Celtics, and the Bruins will all play on the same weekend. Amazing. I don't know that I'm ready for the NHL and the NBA. I've been doing my hockey homework. Hopefully, Sammy Pucks can get off to a hot start again like last season. Ready for hockey because we have the Bruins on Nesson, but the NBA has snuck up on me real quick. And I don't really like to bet a lot of NBA regular season. Those of you that have followed Chicken Dinner for years, I like to make my move in the postseason. I love to do the zigzag theory, and I love the player props. Trae Young, hello! Regular season, though, ugh, you won't see me make many bets. Last year, we did do Jason Tatum over and Celtics money line opening night. But as far as the day-to-day of the NBA, with guys resting and guys not playing, and now this COVID stuff with Kyrie and Wiggins, this is going to be a mess. But that is interesting that we get to middle of October, and all four major professional sports teams in New England could potentially play on the same weekend. Before we get into all the sports betting stuff and some picks I've made and some hedging concerns with the Atlanta Braves, a lot of stuff coming up on the show, I wanted to address Cusackgate. Many of you saw what happened in Chicago. White Sox Dave confronted John Cusack and said that he can't root for the White Sox because he roots for both teams and we don't want him on the bandwagon and this and that and this and that. And that thing exploded. Cusack went mental on his rant, going at everybody that came his way, dragging Barstool, and he was on a rampage on Twitter, which I thought was really interesting. He's like, I don't care that much, but he's going hard at many different comers. So I get dragged into the mess because I made a tweet on October 12th, 2015. It's Cusack with two pictures. One of them on the left, he's got a White Sox hat on, and it's clearly 2005. He looks a lot younger. He looks a lot thinner in the face. And then there's a picture of him present day back in 2015 when the Cubs got good again wearing a Cub hat. And my caption was, you could get beat up for this where I'm from. Clearly a joke. I grew up on the Southeast side. You picked a side. That's the way it went. You were a Sox fan or you were a Cub fan. But I thought that was a hysterical tweet. And that thing got a lot of traction 6 years ago. Well, White Sox Dave retweets that tweet earlier this week. And oh my God, I just got pounded all day. Didn't ask for it, but got it. And some of these responses are just insane. Hey man, what's your fucking problem? John Cusack supports both Chicago teams. You gonna attack him because of that? You act like a little baby, try to beat him up just to get his attention? You should be careful what you say to him. Grow up, little baby. What? It's a joke, you lunatic. What are we talking about? But it didn't stop. It went on literally all day long. Where you're from sounds like a pathetic cesspit where people have nothing good in their lives, so they have to rely on sport for some semblance of happiness and hope. Caring about sports enough to beat someone up is lame as hell, coming from a guy who likes the sports. And my favorite one, you should get shot if you try to beat someone up for this, wherever you're from. God! People are so soft. I remember one of the most popular radio segments I did on WGN in Chicago was when Kyle Long was spotted wearing a Cub hat. And remember, Kyle Long was once, I believe he was drafted by the White Sox as a left-handed pitcher out of high school or out of junior college. The details are murky, but he was a Sox guy. And then the Cubs got good around the same time, 15, 16, and Kyle Long is spotted wearing a Cub hat. And I remember saying, look, here's the deal. Where I grew up on the South Side, if you are a Sox fan, you're a Sox fan. If you're a Cub fan, you're a Cub fan. That's it. Pick a side, no flip-flopping, no running to one side when the other side sucks. That's it. And people were just lighting up the phones, and the text line was on fire. It's a polarizing topic, but really, you should pick a side. You don't see any Red Sox Yankee fans. You don't see any Laker Clipper fans. I know the Red Sox Yankee example is different because it's, you know, you're crossing cities there. You don't see any Giants and Jets fans. You don't see A's and Giants fans. I just thought that was a wild exchange between White Sox Dave and John Cusack, and the fact that I get drug into it, and then people, I'm talking like all day, just negative, you ain't going to do shit, how could you beat somebody up, don't threaten John Cusack. It's not a threat, it's a joke. We all need to relax. And of course, I can't say anything. I can't go back at these people. They're just flipping out. I'm glad you're a fan of assault. What? Anyways, that was my, it was either Monday or Tuesday. I can't remember. I think it was Monday when all that happened. And yeah, I'm just like fending off people with, you know, agendas. Woke Twitter. Wild day. Wild day. Over the weekend, NFL, man, Plinko. If you had the Niners or the Browns, you're a winner, and then you're not. It's that simple. San Francisco's down 10-7, and this is after Trey Lance gets stopped at the goal line in that game. You're down 10-7. It's 4th-and-2 near midfield. San Francisco goes for it. They don't get it. And then 2 or 3 plays later, Kyler Murray gets him down the field. Wobbly Hail Mary. DeAndre Hopkins jump ball gets it. Then they score at 17-7, and you're not covering. You were covering. You were a winner, and then you weren't within 2 to 3 plays. And then the Browns +2. Oh, if you had that one in any contest. I had them both in my contest for the Super Contest. And I thought with a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, Cleveland would be okay, especially after the missed extra point that made it 42-41. And just it just is what it is sometimes. But that sport will just humble the hell out of you. You know, for 3 quarters, 3.5 quarters, you feel good about a side. And then in the fourth quarter, final 7 minutes or so, chaos. It's tough to beat the NFL. Felt good after a Saturday where we had 3 winners, and then you roll into Sunday, you got 2 losers. It's 3-2. It's 60%. I'll take that every single weekend. I'll take 3-2. But man, that San Francisco loss was tough. It started out tough with Lance being stopped and finishes with that Browns game. So you go in a contest, that's 2 wins you probably could have had and 2 losses. I would argue it should have been a split. You should win one and lose one of those games. Shouldn't lose both. But that's the NFL. Alabama against the spread off a loss. Last 5 games, 5-0. Nick Saban, as my buddy Brad Powers has said, has gotten crankier over the years. After they lose, they run it up. It's like that old quote from Remember the Titans when Coach Yost looks at Herman Boone and says, "Run it up, Herman! Leave no doubt." That's what Alabama has done in the last handful of losses, or after the last handful of losses, I should say. Powers added, since the 07 Independence Bowl, Alabama head coach Nick Saban off a straight-up loss, 16-2 straight up, 10-8 ATS. But the last 5 times, 5-0 straight up, and 5-0 against the number, covering by an average of 11.2 points per game. I like Alabama. I don't think Mississippi State is any good. And I still think Alabama has the potential to be a very, very good football team. I'm not going to overreact to one loss against Texas A&M. We know Texas A&M has a lot of players that have blue chip potential and that were recruited as very good players. But that doesn't really change anything. I know a lot of people will be looking at this number and go, wow, you're going to lay 17 with Alabama? Yeah, I'd probably lay 20, 20 and a half. I made the game 21. Mississippi State is going to do one thing, pass the football. They don't own the line of scrimmage. They don't run the football down your throats. They are very one-dimensional. In fact, I was looking at a box score. The game that they beat North Carolina State this year, 24-10, they had 22 rushing yards, 294 passing yards. Against LSU, they lost the game by 3. What do you think the splits were here? 371 through the air, 115 on the ground. And against Texas A&M, the splits were even more lopsided. 408 passing yards, 30 rushing yards. I don't think that X's and O's scheme is going to work against Alabama. I love those teams that can do both. Dual threats. That's not Mississippi State. So Mike Leach going to try and dink and dunk and throw 50, 60 times on Alabama. I think Alabama's pass rush going to get after it. And there will be several situations where Will Rogers, the quarterback from Mississippi State, is facing a team that's very good on third down historically. You're going to have to face them on a third and six, third and seven type basis. And that's not something I think is advantageous. Will Rogers against A&M threw the ball 59 times. You might have to throw it that many times because you're going to be down in this game and probably down early. But Alabama all week at practice, man. Imagine how tough that's been around Nick Saban. These guys are going to be disciplined. The mistakes they made last week are correctable. And I believe in a bounce back spot for Alabama. I had no issue when it hit 17. Bang. Laid it. 17. Some books, 17 and a half. Pinnacle, Bookmaker, a couple American books, 17 and a half. But most numbers at 17. And I would go out and say that by Saturday, it's a night game in Mississippi, I would guess this number is going to be 17 and a half or 18. So when you get a good number with a high-profile team or a public team for that matter, you've got to fire it. There's no reason for you to wait. If you like Alabama, lay the 17. Even if it gets to 16 and a half, it's the same wager. I'm going to push, you're going to win, but I would hate for you to wait and wait for that 16 and a half, and then it goes to 17 and a half. And then game lands 17, you're going to lose. So I'm not going to fiddle around with this number, wait for anything lower. I'm more than content with 17. Feel good about 17 with Alabama. Bartender came out of nowhere on Monday Night Football. Mushed it. Bad. Over the weekend, 1-1-1. Typical bartender weekend. Had the Broncos again, lost. Packers minus 3, pushed. Game should have lost multiple times. And then he had the over, Buffalo, Kansas City, over 57. The game landed 58. So 1-1-1. Then our guy on Monday night, I think it was like an hour before kickoff, goes, hey, love the Ravens, minus 7.5. Lock it up. They were down the entire game. They were down big. Weren't they down 3 touchdowns in that game? So, goes to overtime. Ravens win, I believe, by 6. But when it goes to overtime, you're not going to cover 7 in the hook. He would wait all weekend long, too. That game was 7, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. By the time it gets to kickoff, all the bartenders in the world jump in, push it up to 7.5. And he doesn't cover. So, now the bartender, 6-5-1 on the season. And this is his first losing weekend of 2021. What could possibly go wrong? When a guy who always loses starts out hot, gets a little cocky, throws in 4 plays over a weekend, goes 1-2-1, should have been 1-3. Now the wheels start spinning, and now that cockiness is gone. Now he's grabbing for straws. I can't wait to see what these plays are this coming weekend. I can't imagine they're going to be that great. They never really are. But he won his first 3 weeks with the Broncos, and then has continued to ride the Broncos. So now 3-2 ATS on the Broncos. He's had a couple other wins. Oh, both of the over wins on Kansas City. Was it 2 weeks ago? He had the Chiefs and the over parlayed, and then this week he's on KC over again. So it is what it is. Same old song and dance. He's going to be on the public sides. And he's had a couple dogs this year, actually. Wasn't he on the Lions against the Bears? Bengals against the Bears, took those on the chin. When he sends a dog, you know it's game over. So we await our guy, the bartender, and see what he has this weekend. But That strong start, long gone. I think 4-1 ATS, and now 6-5-1 ATS. Last year, 11-23. The cream rises, usually, with the bartender. Also, our guy Tree Bark Falafel, 4-1 now. He had the Titans over the Jags. Saw this, David Purdom, great reporter for ESPN, tweeted this out, a bloodbath for the books on Sunday. Got a couple quotes from some books around the country. Superbook quote, today has by far been our worst Sunday of the season. Points bet, it's been a very strong Sunday for the bettors. Caesars, not horrendous, but not great. I love that. Definitely somebody in PR there. We can't win them all. We'd have no customers if we won every week. So they did not do well. You can read between the quotes there. Not horrendous, but not great. What's horrendous? Losing every decision? It was not a good week for the sports books. It was not a good week for me. Got smoked in the contest. 0-2 NFL Sunday. Although I wouldn't argue that Patriot total was really a public play one way or the other. That was just a bad situation where Belichick's defense couldn't stop Davis Mills. But again, you're talking about teams like the Titans. Some people laid 2.5 with the Packers. Packers money line. Arizona was a huge public play. The Chargers, a huge public play. A lot of these public sides came through. And that's going to obviously make it tough for the books. I would imagine you don't have many weeks like that. If there's an 18-week NFL season, the books are going to get crushed in like 4 or 5. You do the math. Books are going to be okay. I don't cry for the books. Don't cry for the books. Last thing, before we get to Alex Smith, who's going to chop it up on some hockey. I had some hedging questions last night about baseball. One gentleman, I believe he had the Astros plus 750 to win the American League. And he was asking, hey, you know, what should I do with this? How would you hedge this? And it all depends on what you have and how comfortable you are. Yeah, here's the bet. Ryan Vail at @r_vail96. Sitting on Astros to win the AL plus 750. Any advice on how you'd play the upcoming series against Boston? And my advice was simple, and it's the same to you if you have an Astros future to win the pennant. If you've got a unit, whatever your unit is, 25, 50, or 100, let's just call it 100 for even purposes. Call it 100 at plus 750. So you've got 750 potentially. I would go find Boston at the ceiling and bet at least 2 units, maybe 3. Depends on how you feel. If you like the Astros still, maybe it's 2. If you're feeling the Red Sox, maybe it's 3. That's up to you. You decide what that is. But now you're looking at a series price of Houston and Boston about minus 150 in the market. So you can find the Red Sox plus 130. Some books in Vegas a little bit higher. I know you're likely not in Vegas if you're listening to this, but South Point has plus 135 on the Red Sox. That would be my move if I had Astros at plus 750. Put 2 units down on the Red Sox plus 130, which would make you 260 if they are to bounce the Astros, but then 260 minus 100 is 160. So you win $160, worst case scenario. And the worst case scenario for you is the Red Sox winning the series, but you still win. See, that's why I sort of lean to the 3-unit side. 3 times 1.3 is 3.9, so almost 4 units there. Subtract the unit from the Astros if the Astros lose the series, and then you make almost 3 full units on the series. But you put yourself in a position where you can't lose. That's all you do. I mean, I'd hate for you to come out and have the Red Sox win the first 2 games, and then you really can't hedge at all. And then you're laying a bad number with the Red Sox, and then you start to get weird, and you're like, well, I'll bet the Astros in game 3, and then the Red Sox go up 3-0 potentially. There's nothing like chasing mid-series. It's tough, because then it turns into a mental gymnastics act. Well, the Red Sox can't go up 3-0. So now instead of hedging before the series properly on the Red Sox, now you're like, well, the Astros can't lose 3 in a row. There are sweeps all the time in sports. So I would just say, kick up your feet, light a cigar. Depending on how confident you are about the Astros, it would be a 2 or a 3-unit hedge. If you have 7.5 units up in the air and you put a unit on the Astros to win the pennant to make 7-5, I would go 2 or 3. It all depends on how confident you are, though. I would never tell you how much to hedge. That's just what I would do. And one more thing. Had a couple tweets last night about the Braves, and some of you have 14, 16, 18 to 1 on the Atlanta Braves to win the World Series. Don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. Some pieces not a part of this run. No Ronald Acuna Jr., no Marcell Ozuna. Still don't have full strength with the arms, but that team still thumps the baseball, and they are dangerous. So they bounce the Brewers, and now they'll face the winner of the Dodgers and the Giants. So really, it's tough to hedge when you don't know who the Braves are going to play. You get a much better shake if it's the Giants. Like, if it's the Dodgers, that series price, I would imagine, if it's Dodgers and Braves, with the Dodgers having, well, actually, no, the Braves will have home field in that one. So it's interesting, though, because the Dodgers will be favored no matter what. But I'm going to guess if it's Braves-Giants in a seven-game series, the Giants are -175. Even that sounds low. -185. Thing is, at that point, the books are going to try and make the Giants more expensive because they are extremely liable on Giants pennant and Giants World Series. Some of these books are going to get destroyed if the Giants win the whole thing. So knowing that, I'm just speaking out loud here. I didn't write these numbers down. If it's Braves and Giants, Giants have home field, seven-game series. Giants -215, maybe. And then you could take back the Braves at +185. That sounds fair. If it's Braves-Dodgers, remember, Braves have home field. The Dodgers are still -180. -190. They have to be in that range because everybody's going to bet the Dodgers. You have to think about expected handle and expected liability. If you open the Dodgers -140, fuck, you're going to write that to -180, 190. So you're going to need the Braves no matter what. Now you're going to need them even more. It's tough to know what to do, though, until we have that series. But I know some people have already put their tickets on PropSwap. Some people, if you have a book like DraftKings, you could cash out. I'm looking at some places right now. FanDuel's got the Braves +450 to win the World Series. MGM 5-1. PointsBet 550. Caesars 6-1. So if you have 14, 16, 18-1, I don't know that you can hedge yet, but the math and the strategy will become a lot easier after this decisive fifth game between the Giants and the Dodgers. And that market, poof, flip a coin in game number 5. That'll be on Thursday night. Dodgers at the Giants. Urias and Webb. Giants -110 on the open. And a lot of Giants -110, 108, 107, 105. So that game is a coin flip. But we'll actually be able to talk about this on Friday. Give you a much better idea because the numbers will be concrete. We're just guesstimating now. But for those of you that have the Braves in a cash-out situation book, I would think about it because the Braves are going to be pretty big underdogs in this series, and this will be a series where pitching will really be an issue for them. They can outslug a lot of teams, Atlanta, but Milwaukee doesn't have the offense that a team like Los Angeles or San Francisco has. So again, wait this thing out, see where we stand on Thursday night / Friday morning, and we can make a decision from there. It must be hockey season. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he's been on so many times on this show, at AX Smith Sports, co-host of the Ice Guys. He's a handicapper for Against the Number. Our guy, Alex Smith, to talk some puck. Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, Happy New Year, Sammy. Always good to be talking some hockey with you.
Before we do anything else, I want to give you another hat tip. I always give credit where credit is due, unlike some people of this space. You texted me last Thursday, and you're like, hey, man, go take the Blackhawks right now at +230. The goalie's out. There's some other rumblings about some other guys on the team. Go do it now. I looked up this morning, and the Blackhawks to win opening night in Colorado, +170. You saved the audience 60 cents, my man.
Yeah, you know, you got to try and strike early. And the crazy thing about, you know, obviously with everything trying to catch back up to the normal schedule, the night one and two of the NHL season, these lines, these sides and totals have been up since the end of July. So it was actually around August 4th or 5th, give or take, where I, you know, went on to one of my books and I saw all of a sudden this game, Hawks were plus 256 at one point. I put a small piece of that, you know, grab 256. Next thing you know, when it's widely available, 235. And now all of a sudden you've got Pavel Francouz, who's technically the backup goalie for Colorado. But like I said, they're kind of doing a 1A, 1B system. At least that was the plan until he got hurt. He's now out. And then, of course, Nathan MacKinnon goes down. He's in COVID protocol, so he's going to at least miss one, if not two games. And now, like you said, that number has plummeted all the way to the 180 range for the Hawks.
Now, I do want to say this. They are still a prohibitive underdog in the game, and this will happen over the course of a hockey series. You'll give out a big dog, I'll give out a big dog, and it always sort of it rubs me the wrong way because we're trying to help, first and foremost. But you'll give out a plus 230 dog that loses in overtime, and somebody will go, fuck you, man, good pick. And you're like, look, if it went to overtime, plus 230, plus 200, plus 185, those are good bets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, NHL overtime, especially with, you know, you have a shootout, you're talking about a 50-50 proposition. So if you're getting, you know, almost 2-1 or more than 2-1, you can't sneeze at that.
How did we first meet? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember you had me on. This is back in the old VSiN days. You had me on the show, and this was during the height of the first period over craze. And I remember we were chatting then.
You were on fire with the first period. Wasn't it the first period 6 or 7? How many teams were there?
It was five teams. They end up calling it some kind of five thing or whatever. And the five teams were the Hawks, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the San Jose Sharks, and ironically enough, the New Jersey Devils, which is funny because the Devils aren't really known as an offensive team. You don't think over anything when it comes to New Jersey. But that was a year where they had some issues goaltending-wise. And that's the thing. Those five teams were so diverse in how they were cashing first period overs. You had teams like Pittsburgh and Chicago that were scoring those two or three goals early. Then you had teams like the Hawks at that point had some defensive issues. New Jersey had some defensive and goaltending issues. So, you know, there were multiple ways to kind of get to that number, but those were the five that really did it. And they were doing it. It was, I mean, we're talking about runs of 20-2 for the Hawks, 23-3 for Tampa Bay. And it just grew like wildfire.
You've got a list right here. You tweeted this out last week. For those of you listening, you may want to write this down. These are teams to circle for potential first period and full game overs early in the season. Edmonton, Chicago, Buffalo, Colorado, Arizona, Detroit, and Columbus. Those are the teams you're eyeing early. How much do you need to see to go full throttle, though?
I need at least about a week of games. I mean, there's some spots that are going to be right out of the gate. For example, Edmonton, you look at their defensive core, it's just pretty bad. It's one of the worst group of six in the NHL. Their goaltending is really shaky. Mike Smith had some good spots last year, but he's 39 years old, and he's been up and down pretty much his whole career. Mikko Koskinen, his backup's not really a reliable guy night in, night out. And, you know, Duncan Keith is basically the top defenseman there. We saw how he played with the Hawks the last couple of years. He's definitely not the same old Norris Trophy winner that we once saw in the red and black for years. So that's a team that I think, and they're going to score goals, obviously, with McDavid and Draisaitl, but they're going to give up probably just as many as they put in. And so that's definitely one right out of the gate. But some of the other teams, like the Hawks, like Detroit, for example, give them some time. I think they'll kind of grow. And then there's other teams that are just going to be really bad, like Buffalo, Arizona, Columbus, that might just end up giving up goals by the bucketful every single night.
Have you thought about a potential angle on Buffalo to get shut out? I think that's going to happen. If they play, you know, in a 30-day month, if they play, I don't know, 13, 14 games, could they get shut out 4 or 5 times in a month?
They possibly could. The angle I'm looking at with Arizona and most likely Buffalo too will be playing their opponent team total over. Like I said, if you look at the goaltending setup for these two teams, you got in Arizona, Carter Hutton, and then there's a bunch of just random guys that are from the AHL that they're kind of just shuffling around to be his backup. But Hutton's a guy who's well past his prime. He was in Buffalo when they struggled the last couple of years. And then for Buffalo, they've got Craig Anderson, who's 40, going on 41 years old. This guy was playing with the Blackhawks back in the dark ages in 03 and 04. And he's still hanging around, but he's definitely not anywhere close to being a number one goalie for a team that's trying to contend. So those are two teams that are going to be in tank mode probably by American Thanksgiving. And chances are we'll be able to cash with those opponents scoring left and right.
Is there a team you're buying this year that maybe didn't have the greatest season last year? Maybe a bounce back team or just a buy on team in general? Who do you like?
Yeah, I'd say the Vancouver Canucks. They're a team that's loaded with talent. They're finally able to get some contract disputes settled with Elias Pettersson, who's a great forward. He seems like he could be a bright star in the league. Quinn Hughes, a solid young defenseman. They've got a decent goaltender tandem. They've got Halak that came over from Boston. He's going to be a good backup to kind of help Thatcher Demko, you know, get kind of in the groove. Demko's only 25 years old. Remember, he got kind of thrown in the fire as the number one starter a couple of years ago in the bubble. And so he needs time to still grow and develop to be a top 10 goaltender. I think he can do that. I think this is going to be a team. You can think about last year, you know, they were the Canadian division, but they had to do a whole lot of cross-country travel from Western Canada to Eastern Canada. No other teams in the league had to travel as much as Vancouver did. Now with, you know, everybody back to the regular divisions, everybody's going to be moving back around. I think it's going to be actually be a little bit less travel for Vancouver, especially since they have a new team in the division that's just a short bus ride away in Seattle.
You could find them like plus 180 to make the playoffs. Are you willing to take that leap?
I think that's a decent shot for sure. Yeah, because you look at that Pacific division, the California teams aren't going to do much of anything. Anaheim, San Jose, LA, they're going to struggle. Calgary, I'll talk about them in a little bit. And of course, Vegas and Edmonton will be at the top, but it'll be kind of a fight with them in Seattle, which should make for a really interesting, because that's a rivalry. Those two cities don't really care for each other. So maybe those two teams will kind of reflect that back and forth. And those two might actually be fighting for that third spot in the Pacific.
Well, wait, I don't want to wait a little bit. You sound like you came prepared with some Calgary heat. What do you got on the Flames?
Yeah, I just don't really like the makeup of this team. You know, they got Sutter back, and he's kind of one of these old kind of dinosaur coaches, defense first, slow things down. And yes, that obviously does work, especially when you get into playoff time, but you're not going to be able to win a lot of 3-2 games night after night in this NHL, and especially in the Pacific Division, because even I talked about those bad teams like LA or San Jose, they can get hot for a night and give you 4 or 5 goals. A Vegas team, which doesn't have as much full speed like they do in the last couple of years, they're still going to, you know, find ways to get shots and do well in the power play. And of course, you got the Central Division. They have to play Chicago, Colorado, St. Louis. I think Calgary is going to find themselves on the outside looking inward late in the season.
So you could find Calgary plus 115, plus 120 to miss the playoffs if you shop around. I don't know, man. I'm a weirdo. I like to look at teams with long shots to make the playoffs. Is there any interest in a team like Detroit at 8-1 to make the playoffs? Ottawa to make the playoffs at 8-1. Arizona to make the playoffs at 8-1. Anaheim to make the playoffs 8-1. Do any of those teams interest you at all, given the number?
No. Arizona. Arizona, actually, I have a point total for Arizona under 67.5, minus $1.20. This could be one of the worst hockey teams we've seen in the last 20 to 25 years. On paper, they look disastrous. They've already had the issues of they're basically getting evicted out of their arena in Glendale. They're trying to build a new place across town. People are saying they might end up being in Houston or Quebec City. So you have that, you know, looming over their heads. They had issues with their management. This is just a dumpster fire of a franchise right now. And now they don't have the safety net of playing the Anaheim, San Jose, LA teams that they could kind of beat up on a little bit. They've got to play Dallas, Chicago, St. Louis, where they've kind of built a bit of a rivalry with the last couple of years, and Colorado. They're going to struggle. Their goaltending's not good. Phil Kessel might want out of town. If he's gone, they don't have any kind of offense whatsoever. So I'm definitely not buying anything Arizona right now. As for Detroit, they are doing things the right way. I love that Nedeljkovic is their goalie. They were able to get him for nothing from Carolina. I think he's going to really help solidify things. They're not going to be the worst team in the Eastern Conference, but I don't think they're ready for the playoffs just yet. But they will definitely be a team worth betting on, especially when you get some good underdog prices on a given night.
I had a couple pro bettors in Vegas tell me they love the New York Islanders. They made a couple positions on them to win the Metro at plus 350, and I believe they made a couple bets on them to win the conference – Don't remember the price, but I'm going to guess it's, you know, 7-1 to win the conference or whatever. Are you high or low or sort of in the middle on the Islanders?
No, I'm high on the Islanders. I like both New York teams in that Metropolitan Division, Rangers and Islanders. I think it's going to be a neck and neck race for the Metro Division. So I wouldn't talk anyone out of playing either one of those teams to win the Metro. As far as the conference goes, I would lean more with the Islanders because we've seen them make two deep runs in back-to-back years, going to the conference final. Barry Trotz and his defensive system, you know, like I said, there's some old school coaches who are defensive first, but at least Trotz has a bit of a mindset to where he can kind of open up that offense, especially later in the year in the playoffs. We don't see them really score a lot of goals in the regular season. They tend to win games 3-2, 2-1, and they can maneuver that way. But they find timely offense up and down their lineup during the postseason. So I definitely, if you can find anything from 7-1, I've seen a 10-1 at one point for them to win the East. I think that's a decent flyer.
Yeah, I'm looking up the numbers right now. Those of you that listen know that I love the FTN Bets prop shop, ftnbets.com, and you search at the top of the page for the prop shop. Pick a player or a team, and it pretty much gives you the best numbers across the American books. And, like, if you look at MGM, 7-1 to win the Eastern Conference. Sugar House, 10-1 to win the Eastern Conference. So that 100 makes you 7 here and 10 there. It's the same bet, but you make $300 extra. So you have to always shop around. Your hometown team, the Blackhawks, are very interesting, very polarizing. I think, you know, we saw the dynasty fall and some pieces have hung around, but they've really sort of rebuilt on the fly here. And this was a team that I didn't really like last year, big picture, long term. But, man, you look at them to make the playoffs, and it's about even money on the yes at some places. So this is a playoff team, the numbers say, potentially.
Yeah, I agree with it. You know, there's very few people in this world who have been more critical of Stan Bowman's moves than myself. I have definitely shredded this guy on Twitter and on shows I've been on. But he turned things around this summer. He made some big moves. The fact that he got Marc-Andre Fleury for literally nothing. He traded away a player who was in the ECHL, and then Vegas decided that at first they weren't even going to transfer him to their ECHL team. He was going to stay in Indy. Then 2 weeks later, they just decided, oh, we're going to release him. So $7 million in cap space is all the Hawks had to pay to get Marc-Andre Fleury, who just won a Vezina trophy, who will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And the guy's won 3 Stanley Cups and has been the 5 Stanley Cup final over the years. That's amazing to do. And now you have him to build up Kevin Lankinen, who had a great rookie season. You have a solid goalie tandem. Like I said, you kind of cut the fat now with getting rid of Duncan Keith. You bring in Seth Jones, sign him to a long-term deal. You also get a decent defender in Jake McCabe, who comes over from a bad Buffalo team. Now he gets to be rejuvenated and play with a better unit. And then you talk about the top 6. Jonathan Toews is back and healthy. Kirby Dach can play a full season after having that wrist injury. Patrick Kane, who played last year through an injury, seems to hopefully will be, you know, better and rested. Tyler Johnson comes over from the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's now a guy that's going to be plugged in as the top line forward, but he can play in any of those 4 line positions, whatever you need him to do, penalty kill, power play, you know, defensive, you know, forward on that checking line, he can do it. Jujhar Carr is another guy on the bottom 6 that can really add some grit and toughness. He throws the body around, not afraid to drop the gloves. I love what this Hawks team has done. They look about as good as a team as we've seen since the dynasty run, honestly. I think they make the playoffs, and once they get there, they've got enough veteran talent to make some serious noise.
Well, that brings me to a conversation I want to have about Patrick Kane, because when the Hawks are cooking, odds are good that Patrick Kane has a all-world type season, which we've seen him do several times. I looked down this list, man, for the Hart Trophy. McDavid, 2-1. That's like Mike Trout to win the MVP. You got no value there. Then it's McKinnon, Matthews. We get down into the 15, 20-1 range in Kucherov. And I have to go like 12 guys down to get to Patrick Kane at 35-1. I might do it.
It makes sense in theory because, like you said, he is kind of he's the MVP for the Hawks, that's for sure. But as far as the league is concerned, and that 2-1 price with David, that's there for a reason because that guy is Atlas. He has to keep the world on his shoulders at all times for Edmonton to do anything. He needs to be a 50, if not 60 goal guy, 100-point, 120-point guy for them to stay afloat. So when you put those kind of numbers up, you're almost a shoo-in to win league MVP. But, Kane, I definitely would take a flyer for him, possibly with the Rocket Richard Trophy. Another guy I like with the Hawks would be Alex DeBrincat. I think Alex DeBrincat might be the even stronger choice for that, as well as the Art Ross Trophy for most points. I think he's going to really emerge and be the leader and kind of, take some of the pressure off of Kane. Kane's going to get his 30 goals. But I think at the end of the day, I would not be shocked to see DeBrincat have 40, 45 goals, especially, like I said, being on that second line with Jonathan Taves.
So DeBrincat's goal total, 36.5.
I bet that over.
Kane's total, you said 30, 29.5.
So you're splitting hairs, but I mean, it just seems, barring some kind of long-term injury, he should be able to get past that 30-goal mark.
And then McDavid's number, if he's 2-1 to win the Hart, how is his goal total only 44.5? Like, how do they get to that number? You just threw 50 and 60 out in the wind.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I guess they're looking, too, because what people, you look at the last couple of years, he was on the same line as Leon Draisaitl. Now that line split up, so a lot of those assists that McDavid would have would be goals going to Draisaitl. I think he might have more chances to score. Probably, like I said, 50. I can see 50 goals and maybe 45 assists, as opposed to saying 40 goals and 65 assists. So that's the way I think the books may have not had that adjustment yet to knowing that Edmonton's been able to kind of split those two guys up.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple more questions. You brought up one point total that you liked. You went way under on the Arizona Coyotes. Any other point totals that you like?
Yeah, I'm on the under 91.5. You can find 92.5 with the Calgary Flames. I played over 91.5 with the Hawks. And I also played under 95.5 with the Washington Capitals. The way that they exited out of the playoffs the last couple of years has been really disappointing. Their Stanley Cup window seems to be closing awfully fast. Everybody's talking about Alex Ovechkin trying to go for Gretzky's record, but now he's banged up to start the season. Nicholas Backstrom also on injured reserve. We won't see him at least for the first month of the season. There's a lot of teams that are moving up in that Metropolitan Division. We just talked about the Islanders and the Rangers. You also look at the Philadelphia Flyers. They're trying to get a little bit better. You've got Carolina still in the mix there. So I think Washington could possibly be on the way out. And Pittsburgh's another team that I see kind of struggling. I would not be shocked to see a postseason this year in the Eastern Conference with no Sidney Crosby and no Alex Ovechkin.
That number on the Boston Bruins, has me scratching my head. Point total on the Bees, 102.5. It seems high, but, man, they just win in the regular season. So I think that's a good number.
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at the top four teams in the Atlantic. You got Boston, Tampa Bay, Toronto, and Florida. They all have point totals over 102. And what that's telling you, the books are telling you with those numbers, is that this division, yes, they're going to beat up on each other, but then they get that many points and have 400-point-plus teams in a division. I mean, a lot of games are going to have to go into overtime against one another and make those three-point games to try to push past that eclipse, that mark. I just don't see that happening with all four of those teams. If I had to pick two of those four to be on the decline, it would probably be Boston and Tampa Bay for the simple fact of this. Look at the amount of games those two teams have played over the last 3-4 years, and you can condense it even to the last 19-20 months. You make deep playoff runs, teams start to fade out and get tired in the regular season. And then you add into the mix the Olympic break that's going to be coming up in February. So a goalie like Andrei Vasilevskiy is going to have to go represent Russia. He may not get a whole lot of time late in the season, especially if they're coasting to get a playoff spot. That might hurt the point total a little bit. Next thing you know, you see Boston, they get in, but they only have 96 points. Tampa Bay gets in, but they only have 99 points. So I'd be a little cautious with those four teams in the Atlantic.
You haven't made any future bets yet, but if all things go well in the first month of the season, who's a team that you might look at end of October, early November, at the right number, and pop in a future bet on this team? Who would that team be?
One team I would take maybe a flyer with, depending on how things go in the first month. I mentioned Chicago. They're at 50-1 in some spots now. You might be able to get them at 55, 60-1, and then if they start winning early, that number is going to come crashing down because we know the Hawks are a public team, And if they stay afloat and everybody's seeing, oh, Fleury's back to playing like himself, Taves is playing like himself, then money's going to come rushing in on grabbing that price. So that's one I would take a shot with. Obviously, you look at the top teams like a Tampa Bay, even a Colorado. Except Colorado now having some issues where that was, you know, a minus 200 to win the division. You might actually be able to get a plus price in a few weeks for them to win the division, which I think they should be able to do. It would take a lot of injuries for them to struggle and not finish first in that Central. And those are two that I would have circled so far. Like I said, you know, as things shake out, and obviously you got to look at injuries, COVID still being an issue. You don't want to jump too fast into getting a future that's locked in all the way through the summer. You might want to just give it some time and let things shake out a bit.
Yeah, but if Colorado starts 3-7, 5-9 or something like that, there will be buyers on other teams, and that will obviously create potential value on the Colorado Avs, who I'm still pissed at. They choked away a 2-0 lead last year against Vegas.
yeah, same here.
Man, oh, man. He is Alex Smith, one of the greats as far as handicapping hockey. Against the number, the Ice Guys, and please follow our guy at AX Smith Sports. You know I love you. You always come on when we talk hockey, and there's nobody else I would rather have on to talk puck than with you, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, always appreciate it, Sam.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Alex Smith for hopping on the show. Record check 176, 165, and 5. We are up 2.9 units, and that's A-OK in my book. And we hope to have the Blackhawks come through tonight, plus 230. Thanks to Alex for saving us some coin there. Got ahead of the move, and we've got three in the hopper. Alabama, minus 17. Iowa, minus 11.5. And the Patriots, plus 4. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you Friday right here on Chicken Dinner. So until